Accession number 18622, Reel 2.
Jim Brand, Reel 2. You were talking about cafeteria messing.
Yes, the galley that they had was fitted with the most, almost sumptuous equipment by comparison with the ships that we've been, you know, we had in our service. The galley range itself was a real eye-opener. The top of the galley range could be used for cooking on. You know, there was this polished steel top to the galley range. It was oil-fired. The galley range was all oil-fired. And there were steam chests and steam boilers, you know, these big, as well as the ordinary ovens and things like that. We even used to bake our own bread on board there. Well, of course, most ships used to in those days anyway. Even in our Navy, they baked their bread. But and across the front of the galley, there was a cross passage that went from one side of the ship to the other that went right past the counter of the galley. Then there was a ladder on both sides. You came up one ladder, went past the galley, collected your food, and went down the ladder the other side. I think you came up the port side, went across in front of the galley, picked up your food, and then went down the starboard side ladder. The mess decks were right underneath.
Anything else that you remember about the vessel?
Oh, I remember all about the LSTs, of course. Oh, the other thing, you were talking about hospitality. We were there for Christmas. And just before Christmas, we were inundated with stuff, turkeys and things like that, that were sent in from outside. You know, that they really looked after us well.
When was the ship ready then?
Well, we commissioned just before Christmas. And then we went on trials. Of course, what you want to remember, we were one of the first ones. We were one of the first LSTs to be commissioned. And there was a lot of trials to do, which we did out on the river there. I remember it was bitterly cold, too, when we were carrying out these trials. We went up to a place called Oyster Bay on one occasion, and in fact, it was just like a little village ashore, and it was very pleasant there. You know, not at all like living in New York City. And that's what I found in America, that once you got outside the cities, the people changed enormously. Their way of life and their outlook on life is completely different.
In what way?
Well, I suppose they're, to use a modern expression, more laid back. Life isn't the hurry, the rush that's like in New York. People were quite happy to take their time about doing things, you know. They seem to have a different sort of character as well, a much more pleasant sort of character to the people out in the country. I noticed that almost everywhere we went like that. The people in Basking Ridge, New Jersey, were just like being home, really, anywhere in the country town at home. They spoke with a different accent, of course, but the people that were there were so friendly. They were very nice people, excellent people.
How did the trials go?
Oh, excellent. One thing we did have to do, our captain was very dissatisfied with the anchor. Each ship had a kedge anchor, you see, which when we went on a run into the beach, we used to drop the kedge on the way in, and then the winch would help to haul the ship off the beach. He was dissatisfied with the anchor they supplied, and he asked for a much heavier one to be supplied, which he was given, to put on the stern of the ship. Then we travelled around quite a lot on the inland waterways, going one place and another. I think more or less for people to see exactly what we were about, more than anything else. We went down to Norfolk, Virginia, and I know we traveled quite a bit in the States, and then eventually we came home, sailed up to Halifax, and then across the Northern Atlantic in about February of 1943.
How did the LST sail in the Atlantic?
Well, she rolled worse than the Flora class Corvette. The ships were all welded, of course. There were no rivets in the LSTs that were built in America. Everything was welded, as the modern day construction is, of course. Nearly all ships are welded now, but it was new to us at the time. But the LSTs, don't forget, they had a massive tank deck. It would take 22, with a pinch you could get 24 in, of the biggest tanks, army tanks, on the tank deck. And the upper deck was then available for things like soft skin vehicles. We had a lift forward that used to be able to take vehicles up to the upper deck. Everything had to be shackled down, of course, with shackles and chains and one thing and another, to make sure they didn't move once the ship went to sea. But the ship rolled terribly, dreadfully. And the other unfortunate thing about the action at sea was that if there was a stern or a bow sea, that the ship used to bounce. It used to bounce from the middle. The bow and stern used to sort of flap, using the middle of the ship as almost like a hinge. It was so bad that if you were stood up on the stern, where the cable went over the stern from the for the anchor, the kedge anchor, and you were heading into a head sea, it would bounce so badly you'd be off your feet. Your feet would leave the deck. It was so hard a bounce. It was almost impossible to walk on it when it was like that.
So did you get seasick aboard this ship?
No, I didn't. There were people that were, but I didn't. Perhaps I was a bit more hardened to it by that time. I didn't get seasick. In fact, I never got seasick again.
Did the boat come across individually or?
Oh, no, we were in a big convoy. The convoy came in and we went back to, we went up the Clyde when eventually we got back. We then got sent to a place that now become quite famous in the Navy, of course, up to Gerlach Head, where the submarine base is now, near Helensburgh. When we went up there, we went up there to do trials with the Army, landing trials, so to give the Army a chance to find out exactly what we could do and what they could do. We were trying out all sorts of things to more or less work out a drill, I suppose, that could be used for the rest of the LSTs.
Any incidents that you remember during those landing trials?
No. Things would go wrong, but we never lost anything. Nobody got killed or injured or anything like that. Everybody was in the same boat. We were all, you know, in the dark and trying to find out exactly what was what, you know. But the trials went off all right. I remember the jetty there. All they had there at the time was a little one-armed sort of davit with a hook on it, and that was all they had on the jetty. The only place that was a hotel up the road, the Gerlach Head Hotel, was the only pub in the place. If you wanted to go ashore any time, you went to Helensburgh, which was a fair old walk up the road. But I went to Helensburgh a couple of times while we were there. But on completion of that, I can't remember where we loaded for that. But we went and picked up we filled the ship up with Canadian tanks and Canadian soldiers. The ship was filled right up, and the soft, what we saw called soft skin vehicles on the upper deck. But we had a tank deck full of tanks, and all the Canadian soldiers that were that manned the tanks and the vehicles. And we carried from that, from there, we went out to the Mediterranean, and we landed in Sicily. That was the landings that happened in Sicily.
On the actual
invasion. Oh, yes, yes.
What do you remember about the D-Day landings in Sicily?
Well, I remember going into Palermo Harbour. That was a bit of a sight. It was nothing like as scary as we thought it would be. When these ships were built in the first instance, you know, we were told that we could expect 80% losses on any operation. We were told that to start with. But it didn't work out like that in Sicily. It was a fairly easy landing, Sicily. We didn't stay very long. We went in and we landed our troops we got out of there and went back to Ferryville in North Africa, near Bizerta.
But when you went into the beach at Sicily, were you under fire?
No. No, we weren't there. No.
So there was no damage?
No. Nothing whatsoever. It was a great relief. You know, we'd been expecting a lot of fun and games, as you can imagine. It was a great relief, and the soldiers had a clear run. We had no problems. We ran into the beach. I believe that the captain put in a report afterwards to say that he had to keep his engines running ahead to keep the ship on the beach properly, you know, so that they could disembark out over the ramp and things like that. But as far as I can remember, there were no incidents. There was no action at all. Not even an air attack.
And you landed Canadians?
Canadians, that's right, yes.
What did you think of those troops?
They were very good. Excellent, yes. They were very good. Of course, being born on the LST for duties, they were entitled to their tot, you see. Which a couple of them were a bit naughty, because senior NCOs were allowed to get their tot neat, and two or three of them saved them up for a week and had a hooli on Saturday night or something on the way out to the beach from leaving UK. And I think we had to pump them three out. They got over it all right, but I think it gave them a bit of a shock.
What's a hooli?
They drank their week's rum and they got absolutely smashed, you know. But that's nearly a pint of rum, you know, and rum at 95.5 proof, you know. No wonder they had to be sort of looked after.
But when they landed on the beaches, did they get wet?
No, dry foot landing. Oh, no.
Any other memories of Sicily?
Well, we did a couple of trips there. We went from Ferryville over there again a couple of times. But it was almost a non-event, really, in the end. The soldiers, of course, after a few days, they ran into a lot of opposition ashore. And, of course, the battle started then. But I don't know whether we landed there and taken them completely by surprise or what. Actually, on the trip, after we passed them, as we came across the top of North Africa, I was stood on the stern of our LST looking at the convoy. We were in a pretty big convoy. And I suddenly saw a torpedo track coming in. It went right underneath our ship. Of course, the thing is, by the time the bubbles come up from the torpedo was well in front of the bubbles, you know, by quite a long way. But we went right over the top of it. But these flat-bottom LSTs were a bit like that. They had they were sunk by torpedoes, some of them, but the torpedoes had to be shallow set to hit them. But this particular torpedo went straight up and went through to the middle of the convoy and hit a tanker, which was immediately set alight.
Do you know which unit of Canadian Army you took ashore?
I can't remember. I really can't remember. I wish to goodness I'd written it all down at the time, but of course you don't think of these things when, you know, you're young and foolish, I suppose. And
how did the sailors get on with the Canadian soldiers?
Very well. Very well indeed. No problem at all. There was no problem at all. In fact, generally speaking, I would say no matter what troops we had on board, I can't remember our sailors and either American troops or British troops or any of the troops we had on board having any trouble at all whatsoever. I remember they filled the ship up once with Italian prisoners of war for us to take back to North Africa. But this wasn't from Sicily. It was from somewhere on the mainland. Of course, they filled the tank deck with these people. There was an admiral captured with them as well, and the captain gave him his cabin to live in while he was on board. But they were an ill-disciplined mob. They were terrible. No respect or anything else, not even for their own admiral. My memory serves me correctly. And when they left, the ship was lousy, filled with fleas. We had a terrible time getting rid of them.
In what way did they show their disrespect?
Oh, they would shout back at him, you know. He would try and, because we have them on deck a few, some at a time, give them some fresh air and all the rest of it. They didn't seem to think he would, you know, you thought he was just another deckhand or something like that, the way they treated this admiral. I was surprised, actually. Of course, it may be that they realized that they were no longer under discipline. I don't know.
Who did you feel had the worst job, the Canadian soldiers or you?
Oh, for the landing in Sicily. Well, on any occasion, the people that went ashore had it to face from then on. You know, it didn't matter a damn what happened. They had a war in front of them. Ours was usually short-lived. I mean, there were times when it became very fraught, and there were times when probably the worst time of for the soldiers was when they left the ship as well. But not at Sicily. As I said, they had a dry foot landing, and they left us, and we never even saw a shot fired at all at Sicily. And the same went on after even the other trips we went back from North Africa with extra troops. We put them ashore in different places in Sicily, but we never had any trouble at all. Then, of course, after after Sicily was occupied by us and liberated, if I suppose you should say. We spent that time in Ferryville, which is in the inland lake. You come through an entrance from the Mediterranean in Bizerta, and just that's this big inland lake that just inside Bizerta, and the Ferryville became the big base for the British LSTs.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, we eventually were loaded up in North Africa again, and off we went. We eventually were told after we got well out to sea that we were on our way to Salerno to do the landings at Salerno. And we realized that this was going to be different. This landing had to be different because we were now well up the coast of Italy. And at that time, Monty hadn't gone across the Messina Straits until, you know, they went across while we were still at sea on our way to, on our way up to Salerno. We landed at Salerno. I can only tell you what happened to us. The bigger picture I've got since, from reading and things like that, but at that time, all I can remember is what happened to us. And we arrived at Salerno just before daybreak. The 9 o'clock news on the night before we landed, we heard that the Italians had capitulated. And we all thought to ourselves, well, that's smashing. Run ashore tomorrow. You know, there'll be no war tomorrow. It'll be easy. And, of course, we went into the beach, and we were very soon, that idea was very soon put out of mind. It became a dreadful situation. They got ashore on the beaches, and they were literally waiting for us. It was the worst venue for a landing, I think, that anybody could have selected. The place was almost completely surrounded by hills that overlooked the beach. This big, wide-open beach. The Americans were landed at one place, and the British were landed at another. There was quite a wide gap in between. The Americans seemed to hit the worst. Well, they got into a lot more fighting apparently than we did, because our people managed to get into the hills by the end of the first day. The brigade of guards did anyway, and. But we were talking about the landing itself, which is what I know most about. We went into land, and we put the ramp down, kept the engines running ahead to keep the ship bow onto the beach, started putting the stuff ashore, the tanks and all the rest of it ashore. The beach, there was already a beach party there to direct where people had to go. They'd put down some of these metal plate things for things to run on so they didn't get bogged down in the sand. And the landing had started. But, of course, we were under continuous fire, even on the way into the beach from 88 millimeters from the hills surrounding. And about every 10 minutes, there was a taxi run or a bus run or something, I suppose you would call it, almost, you could almost time it. An aircraft would appear from around the back of the hills, do a sweep along the beach, machine gun, and drop a few bombs, and then disappear behind the hills again. And that happened all the time. We weren't hit ourselves. We were lucky. The LST that was next to us, there was another LST next door to us on our port side, and another one on the other side of that one again. And an 88 millimeter shell hit the bridge of the center of the three ships. And the captain was very, very badly injured. It didn't kill him, but he was very, very badly injured. He was brought into our wardroom because we had a doctor on board, being the leader of a flotilla. We were the leader of the 7th Flotilla LSTs. And this captain was brought into the, he was a lieutenant commander, was brought into the wardroom to be looked after by our doctor. I think he recovered all right, but we had people that were eventually died with their wounds on board. We immediately put ashore again. By that time, everything having been put ashore, the ship's company then joined up in pairs carrying stretchers and went out on the beach and started picking up the wounded and bringing them back on board. We picked up the wounded, brought them on board, kept them on the stretchers, and laid them down in the tank deck. And our sick berth attendant, a young chap called McCulloch, he earned the VC that day. He was completely imperturbable, even out on the beach with these shells going off. And the bombing, he would attend to the wounded, and wouldn't it didn't seem to make any difference to him. Whereas I felt as though I wanted to dive in a hole and pull it in after me. He didn't seem to even notice. Anyway, after some time, we finished bringing everybody that we could find on board that was wounded. I remember I had one chap that had to be taken up to the wardroom. So we went up on the lift, had him on the stretcher. And these were British stretchers. And don't forget, we were on an American-built ship. And I brought him down the port side of the superstructure and into the door by the galley flat. And the stretcher wouldn't go through the door. It was too wide. And I tilted the chap at the other end, and I tilted the stretcher a bit to one side to allow it to go through the door. And with the same, this chap's right leg just fell off the stretcher, swinging from a stocking. Anyway, we took him into the sick bay. And the doctor took his leg off. And my boss, the supply officer, came out with it a few minutes later in his hand. He said, "Look at that, friend." He said, "That was a perfectly good foot about an hour ago," and threw it over the side. Anyway, we left the beach soon afterwards, and we went out to a hospital ship that was in the bay. We went alongside the hospital ship, and we offloaded all the wounded onto the hospital ship. All the soldiers that were wounded still had their rifles and that with them, but the hospital ship wouldn't allow the guns to be brought on board. They weren't, by the Geneva Convention, they weren't allowed to carry the arms. So we had to collect the rifles up and put them in a magazine for safekeeping. We returned them to the army when we got back to North Africa. But anyway, we put everybody, all the wounded that we had from the tank deck and the wardroom and various places, onto the hospital ship. And then we went back to North Africa. No, we'll delay that. We went back to Sicily for another load. We filled up with American troops that time. We heard that the Americans were being pushed back on their beach just as we were leaving the beach, and we had to stand by for a while in case they needed to be taken off again. But as luck would have it, they managed to hold, and so we then, just before it got dark, we left and headed back to Sicily. We went to Sicily and picked up a load of American troops. We took them back, and it was just as bad the second time. Just as bad. And the Americans, thank goodness that they were a bit battle-hardened by then. If they had been green, I don't know how they would have faced it. But I suppose after the fighting their way through Sicily, they were a bit more up to it. Anyway, we did three runs to Salerno altogether. And each run was almost as bad as the last. Not quite as bad. The third one, I suppose it was a bit easier, but it wasn't all that clever. Then eventually, of course, the Monty's crowd managed to join up with the people on the Salerno beach. And that was it. They managed to break out. Then, of course, after that was over, we were...